Welcome, everyone.
Welcome
to You're Gonna Need a Bigger Bottle. It's a podcast about movies and wine. And for those of you who don't know shit about one or both of those things, my name is Jamie. I'm the wine guy.
He's Jamie. I'm Scott. I'm your movie guy. And we are here to help you, dear listener. Each episode, we pair a movie that I love with a wine that he loves. Or sometimes I'll pair a movie that I love to a wine that he has chosen.
And that also
we drink sight unseen. Sometimes you haven't had them before. Sometimes you just like haven't had the vintage before.
Vintages change every year.
Yeah. And for the first time ever last week, I picked a movie that I'd never seen before for funsies. And
it worked out. It worked out real well.
Oh man, that would have sucked if I hated that movie.
It would have been fine. It would have been an interesting content.
I would have just lied about it.
You would have said you loved it.
Oh yeah. And then the moment I hit stop on the recorder, like, wow, that movie blew. I hate you for liking it, Jamie.
Wow.
No.
Not nice.
No, I wouldn't have
and
done
dishonest
that.
To our lovely audience.
Yeah, I don't do that anymore. Not since Ted got mad at me.
Wait, what
really,
happened?
Ted got really mad at me a long time ago because he was witness to me like having a conversation with someone and they were like, oh, have you seen this movie? And I went on about it. No, I liked this part and I didn't like this part that much and I really like this. And then the person walked away and Ted was like, I didn't realize you'd seen that. And I'm like, no, I haven't seen it. I just like, I read a lot about these things. And then Ted didn't trust me for months. And so finally I was like, all right, Ted, I don't want you to give me that face anymore. So I will stop pretending to have seen things. And I don't do that anymore. And I've never done it on the show.
Good. I'm glad.
I'm pretty sure I've never done it on the show.
It's something that I know that you have done at least a couple of times since then.
Don't do it anymore.
You've done it. You've told me that you've done it.
No.
Yes.
Give me an example, Jamie.
I don't have one.
Name,
but like,
names, Jamie.
I drink a lot. Things are lost to time.
I mean, truthfully, at the end of our After Yang Von Vinning episode, I did tell the audience that Marie Antoinette was delightful. And then
you hadn't seen it.
In the edit, I realized that was lying to the audience, so I cut that out because I didn't want to lie to people.
What a motherfucker.
I didn't want to lie to people. I'd already watched the movie. I confirmed that it was, in fact, delightful.
It is delightful.
Still, I felt Ted's sad, betrayed face, and I knew that it had to go.
That is a face that will compel you to do the right thing.
Yep.
Anyway, we tell you why we like them, how they're made, and why they work. Sometimes we find a pairing that works. We almost never do.
I concur. It would be shocking if... It would be nice if the ratio went in the other direction.
Yeah, but it's not going to happen.
Not
anyway,
today.
This is part three of our mini-series, A Philadelphia Tasting Menu.
Exclamation point.
Exclamation point. We talk so much about food on this show, and I definitely don't give Scott any pairing suggestions in advance of our recordings. I will try to do better for you, Scott.
You're not even giving me pairing recommendations. You're giving the audience pairing recommendations.
Well, I mean, it feels like you want them for you.
Well, yeah, because you always say, yeah, this wine, you would have liked this wine a lot more if you had it with food.
Like, I do say that a lot.
Me.
You're right.
By the way, audience, if you couldn't tell, this is the second part of a two-part recording session.
We've already had several glasses of wine and...
And I remain unmedicated for my diagnosed attention deficit hyperactive disorder. And therefore, this will continue to happen. Nonstop digressions and interruptions. Please continue, Jamie.
I thought that maybe we should talk about the thing that's supposed to go with wine, which is food. So I put together a list of some of my favorite Philadelphia restaurants. What are you doing?
I'm just disappointed because you have food in all caps with an exclamation point, and I thought you were going to do Philip Seymour
food.
Hoffman in Twister. Yeah, food. Food.
I contacted the owners of some of these restaurants to see what dishes they wanted to showcase.
Well, on my side of things, on the movie side, I'm sticking with things that are in some way about food or about the power of a shared meal. I want to be very clear. I will continue to reiterate this. I am pairing to the wine. Jamie had a dish selected for him by these chefs. He picked a wine. I paired a movie to the wine. I did not pair a movie to the food, which I only just had a scant hour and a half ago. Nor did I pick a movie that would pair with the cuisine or the culture or the origins of any of those things.
If we were going to pair a food to this movie, I don't even know where to begin.
I mean,
this is a movie about eating.
I have some suggestions. It is a movie all about eating. It's about some other things as well.
Right.
Yeah.
But
it's also about the horrors of being a young person and in particular, a young woman.
And also a little bit about trauma visited upon us by our parents.
Yep. We should, we'll save it. We'll save it till after the spoiler warning. Because this one actually warrants a spoiler warning.
It does. It does. So for this third dish in our mini series, I contacted Francis and Kathy Lee Credarola, the owners of Le Vertu in South Philadelphia. This is a longtime staple of East Passyunk Avenue. And honestly, I think they have one of the most beautiful outdoor spaces in Philly. They focus on traditional Abruzzese cuisine, and I really, really love this restaurant. It's been a favorite of mine since I went there the first time, which was definitely like long past when I should have, considering the neighborhood that I lived in. But I've been back a ton, and I really, really love it. They chose the tacozzelli pasta alla pescolana with Abruzzese sausage, local mushrooms from Mycopolitan Mushrooms, which is a local mushroom grower.
Mushroomery.
Mushroomery.
Mushroomier. No.
I'm going to suggest that to the...
Mushmonger.
Mushroomier is good.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
They also add black truffle paste, saffron, and parmigiano to this dish. I was trying to find out what pescolana means, and I just Google translated it, and apparently in Italian, pescolana means shark, and I was like, huh, a pasta that's supposed to somehow reference sharks, and then I dug a little bit deeper, and it just has nothing to do with sharks. It means in the style of a village near this place called Pesco Costanzo.
Which has nothing to do with sharks.
Nothing at all to do with sharks.
But the word means shark?
Pescolana is shark, yes. So, but also like the lana suffix means of or pertaining to.
Shark.
A thing.
Moving on. I was really hoping there was shark in here.
There's no shark. And you ate it. It was pork sausage in there.
Yeah, but there was also a lot of mushrooms that I slid off my plate that I wasn't going to get
down
with.
Because you don't like mushrooms because you have bad taste.
I'm so sorry. I don't like mushrooms. I'm fucking Jamie. I don't like whatever stupid thing that I don't like.
I don't like Marvel movies because they're bad and dumb.
I mean, that's fine. That's fine.
The wine I chose comes to us from Piemonte. This is the Podericola Nebbiolo di Alba, which is available at Crush Wine Company for 24 United States dollars.
Wait, Piemonte?
Piemonte.
I thought it was Piedmont.
Piedmont, if you're a stupid American. Piemonte,
Why do you always say Piedmont?
Because in the anglicized version of it, you do spell it with a D.
That's dumb. Well, I don't agree.
And you don't agree with how the locals pronounce it?
No, I'm fine with that.
You don't like the anglicization.
I'm confused because somehow you've never said Piemonte before, but now that you did, I realize that the D is not in the writing and frankly shouldn't be there in the pronunciation either.
I agree.
Well, anyway, now that Jamie's done talking, he's not even done yet because he forgot to say what the pairing words were, so I'll do that. Thank you very much.
Go on ahead, please.
Jamie told me that this wine was rough, dark, mushroomy, high contrast, meaning bright fruit against dank earthiness, and traditional, to which I paired a little 2016 film called Raw. Raw. Raw.
Go on ahead with all of the warnings about Raw.
Raw, a 2016 film, a French-Belgian co-production, written and directed by Julia Ducournau. There will be spoilers abound in the forthcoming discussion, and also the movie is very extreme and intense, and has intense and at times graphic depictions of violence and of sex, and there are questions of consent in the depiction of that sex and also in the depiction of that violence, and there's hazing and bullying and collegiate hostility. And it's at a veterinary college, so there are shots of, like, people up to their shoulder in cow asshole, and it's just, it's a lot. So, like, full and intense content warnings for one and all.
All bodily fluids.
Yeah, but if, not all of them. But, if you can deal with that, if you can deal with that level of intensity, I highly recommend it. I gave Jamie no such warnings, because I'm not obligated to. He doesn't look happy about that. yeah.
It was a lot.
It's a lot. It was and remains a lot. All right. Well, We have some business to attend to.
Yes, we do.
Through the ongoing carrot and stick saga of leave us a review and say your favorite Marvel movie, and I'll make Jamie watch a Marvel movie, or I will make Jamie, and therefore you, the audience, listen to me talk about my ongoing travails renovating my bathroom.
You know what sucks about the stick here?
Yeah.
Is that I get it either way.
Right.
I hear about your fucking bathroom bullshit no matter what. And Now I have to sit through it again.
Well, so here's the thing about this. You're supposed to be my friend, and I'm allowed to complain about things that bother me. This, what I'm doing, does not violate the friend contract. I'm allowed to occasionally complain about things that are going on in my life. As yes. you constantly that's, complain that's about things that are going my, on in your life.
That's not my problem here. My problem is up, hearing it
shut
again.
Shut up. The thing that makes this a transgression is that this is not what the audience signed up for, and that's why it's a stick. The stick is not beating you, it's beating the audience.
But it also is beating me.
Well, then be a better friend and just like feign empathy for my struggles with my bathroom.
I do in person when we're talking about this off mic when you are, you know, unhappy about a thing going on. I think that I do a good job.
Jamie's a bad friend, everyone.
Wow.
Jamie doesn't care about my bathroom.
I care about the sunk cost in labor and in time that you put into a project that you find to be annoying.
It wouldn't be so annoying if the bathroom wasn't so small. So previously on the struggles with my downstairs bathroom, it is a very small bathroom. I have not yet measured the square footage because I think it would make me cry. But suffice it to say, the vanity is too large for the space. The shower stall is way too big. And the toilet stall, because it basically does feel like a stall,
yes, it does.
Is for a man of my stature. I am shoulder to shoulder with the walls when I am seated at the toilet. So
I'm making a boom boom.
I mean, sometimes I sit down to pee, okay? When else am I going to look at Twitter?
Sometimes we're tired.
Sometimes we were raised by women, okay? So I have... 2 weeks ago, teased on the episode that I pulled my butt.
Yes.
I pulled my butt. And the struggle herein in pulling my butt was that, so the stall, the adjacent area where the toilet is so small that I wanted to paint in the bathroom. And to paint there, I could not get around the tank. So I had to remove the toilet, which is a pain in the ass to have to unseat and then reseat your toilet. And if you really want to move the toilet, you should separate the tank from the bowl. And those also have to be reseated. But in the act of unseating the toilet, this is wherein I pulled my butt because I was like kneeling in a very tight space, didn't have room to stretch out. And the actual bolts and the nuts were like somewhat rusted. And it just took nearly an hour for me to get the tank unthreaded from the bowl and then the bowl unthreaded from the flange on the floor. And then by the time I got up, I realized that I had like pulled a muscle in my butt and it was a little hard to walk the next day. And that took so goddamn long. And then there was so much time cleaning up that general area because we could never really get back there that it was like dusty and whatever, that like by the time my project time for the day was over, I couldn't even paint. So the toilet sat in the shower stall for a few days until I finally had enough time to finish it. But now it's all done. It's painted.
It's beautiful.
I'm not thrilled with the color, truth be told. It looks exactly like the swatch until you turn the lights on and then it does not look like the swatch and it's maybe a little bit too green. We're not thrilled with it. Tani was trying to be really nice the first day as though I couldn't like see the expression on her face that said, I fucking hate this color. So I don't know. Maybe we'll repaint it next year.
And go through all of this pull your butt. And maybe
pull my butt. But the painting is done. And now we move on to the... Oh, and God, having to put the toilet back together was a whole thing. Because like half the hardware in the actual toilet tank I ended up replacing... And because the bolts and the things were rusted and it took so long, I replaced them. But as friend of the show, Wendy has described it, that any home repair project usually takes 5 times longer than you think it will and requires at least 3 extra trips to Home Depot. And I had to go back and keep getting different hardware because sometimes I wasn't measuring. And I was like, well, this is the right size bolt, but I ended up getting the wrong thread or the wrong length. And then it didn't. And I ended up buying, I think, 4 gaskets to actually... 2 different wax rings before I found the one that was the right height to actually match the bowl to the flange on the floor. And then I went through 3 different gaskets to get the one. And it was like the proprietary one that the fucking manufacturer of the toilet makes to actually replace the one that had started to rot that bridges the tank back to the bowl. It was a whole thing. It was a whole ordeal, and I finally thought I was done, and then I flushed the toilet, and it was the wrong size gasket, and water rushed all out the bottom of the tank. So anyway, if you never want to hear about my bathroom ever again,
leave us a review.
Please leave us a review.
But
leave
them
on.
Don't do that, because he's going to make me watch a bad movie.
Then he'll have to watch a Marvel movie. Well, Jamie, they're not all bad. You enjoyed much of Thor Ragnarok.
I did.
You did not at all care for Green Lantern. I will say, in terms of the dregs of the superhero genre, Green Lantern is like in the bottom, the second to bottom third. There are much worse than that.
I would issue another challenge out there to you listeners. If there's anyone among you who likes Green Lantern, could you please email the show or DM me and tell me why?
They do not exist, Jamie. No one likes 2011's Green Lantern. I'm looking on Letterboxd right now. Wow. Green Lantern has 26 fans on Letterboxd, which means only 26 people
out of the presumably hundreds of thousands to millions of people who use Letterboxd.
Green Lantern has received 17,000 one-half star reviews, 29,000 one-star reviews, 24,000 two-star reviews, 10,000 three-star reviews, 1,700 four-star reviews, and 711 five-star reviews. I got to look at these five-star reviews now.
No.
Who the fuck likes Green Lantern?
Read us one.
So, Beef Salad, just a few days ago, five-star review.
Just a few days ago?
This was on June 24th, 2022.
A new review.
Five-star review. I love green.
That is an insincere review. I just shout out Meat Salad for I love green.
Beef Salad. I also love green. It's a lovely color.
It's a good color. Solid take. I love green.
The movie has a lot of green.
It's got a lot of green.
It's got some emerald, some chartreuse, some hues of sea foam.
Movie is trash.
That movie's dog shit.
Leave us reviews. Tell me what fucking garbage superhero movie you want me to watch next.
Or some of the good ones. Some of them are good. Jamie, you should watch Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman's pretty good.
I saw Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman's
pretty
good.
I liked Wonder Woman. Yeah.
It's a little too abstract in its villainy, but otherwise it's pretty good.
Yeah. And I liked Black Panther too.
And you well, because Black Panther is just good,
right?
Yeah. That's it.
That's reviews. So food. We ate food, and ate this food.
If you
listen to our last episode, you know that Scott and I went out for a nice dinner earlier this week.
Yep, this is definitely interesting. The audience cares about this. They're praying to hear about my bathroom now.
Regrettably, we did not get to eat together in the wonderful outside space that is Liver 2. Although, at some point, we likely will. So I ordered some for takeout last night and brought it over today. And in between recordings, we had the tacozzelli alla pescolana, little handkerchief pastas with the sausage and the truffle and the saffron. And Scotty, what did you think?
Can I have more of it now, please? Save the shrooms, but otherwise I could have more. I would like more of that. Yeah, it was delicious, despite all the disgusting mushrooms.
The mushrooms are delicious.
No, the mushrooms had great flavor. And obviously, I wouldn't want to do without the mushrooms, because the mushrooms are a good chunk of why that sauce is so fucking transcendently beautiful and good. I'm not down with the texture on the mushrooms. But like that's fine. This is my lot in life. I have learned. I will enjoy. In fact, I frequently cook with mushrooms, and I just push them off to the side and let my wife and child consume them. And I enjoy the flavor and not the texture. And the aromas. The aromas are great.
Yeah. Well,
the sauce was so beautiful.
I'm always
so rich and buttery. Shut up. I'm still talking about sauce.
Wow. I was talking about the sauce too.
You asked me what I thought.
Okay, go on.
The sauce was so good. I drank the last of it from the takeout container with the straw. I'll not be judged by you.
And now I guess an ongoing series of like Scott doing weird things with food.
Specifically with sauce.
With sauces. Like he drinks gravy from a coffee mug.
Did it one time. I'll do it again, but it's not like I actively do that.
Every morning he wakes up and brews himself a mug of gravy.
And then I take my cholesterol pills. All right, Jamie.
And then drinks.
If that is your real name.
Drinks a bechamel sauce through a straw.
And listener, let me ask you something.
Yes.
You just had a transcendent pasta dish with exquisite, delicate, rich, buttery, fatty, creamy sauce from mushrooms and sausages and herbs, and it's gorgeous, and there's some left over.
Yep. Like a civilized person, I pick the plate up and lick it clean.
All right. Well, this wasn't a plate. It was in a takeout container box, and I could not shove my face into the box, and a fork nor spoon was going to get me every last dribble of the sauce. So I tipped it up so the gravity could do its job and let all of it funnel into the corner, and used a stainless steel straw, because I'm not a savage who uses plastic straws and just killing fucking seahorses or whatever the hell gets killed by straws that get humped into the ocean. Stainless steel straw. And though the sounds were repulsive to those in the room,
so gross.
I slurped up every last drop of that straw. Waste not, want not, except I do actually want more now. So no, I will not be judged for this. This was the most appropriate way to consume the last of that sauce, to show appreciation to the chef and all the fine ingredients and all the labors that went into bringing that dish to me, except for your labors picking it up and driving it here. You can go f*** yourself, Jamie.
Rude.
I think that all dishes at any fine dining restaurant that comes with a great sauce should be served with a straw.
Sure. Fine.
You, in advance of the next dish coming out, the server comes around and they take away the old dishes and they put out the new dishes and the new cutlery. And they should also just,
give you a little straw.
Put a little straw there so that you can slurp up the sauce. Yeah, I make no apologies to
anyone.
That is
never going to be a point of service, nor should it be. And your slurping of the sauce was gross and loud.
Well, you know what, Jamie? According to Philadelphia Magazine, this miniseries is one of the six most exciting Philly food events of July. And I am half of this miniseries. Therefore, I am 1/12 of the most exciting Philly food events of the month. And therefore, I think that what I say about food consumption has a little bit of weight to it.
That was a ride you just took us on.
It was mathematically sound, however. I did fractions.
Sure.
Fine. What did you think of the food, Jamie?
I thought it was fucking great. As I mentioned, Liver 2 is a favorite restaurant of mine. Although they've had this dish on their menu for a while, I've never had it before. I think the big reason is that I'm very wary of saffron, as I mentioned off mic. I think that saffron can be very easily overdone. And so can truffle when it's not like fresh shaved truffles.
Mm.
And I appreciate that they're using truffle paste here, like a preserved truffle rather than truffle oil, which very much is like acrid and overdone. And I don't really like that flavor or aroma. But I think that the two of them in concert were really, really beautiful. The pasta was perfectly cooked. It was a spectacular dish and goes really well with this Nebbiolo.
I do not agree.
Well, your wife agrees.
That's fine. Good for her.
How can you possibly say that this wine does not go with that food?
What do you mean, how? I took all of those words and I put them together in the correct order.
How can you, with a straight face, trying to say something true, look right at me and say they don't go together?
Okay. Well, first I would take a bite of the pasta.
Uh-huh.
And I would like roll my eyes back into my head orgiastically and have them flutter and with pleasure and delight at how incredibly good that food was.
Okay.
Chef's kiss.
Right.
And then I would take a drink of the wine, uh-huh, which I had half a bottle last night. Loved it. Had a great time with the wine.
Yep.
Did not enjoy it as much when paired with that food.
No, you're just wrong.
But that's how. That's how I can say that, okay, because sure. I didn't like it as much.
Okay. Sure. Okay.
I just don't. Mm. Yeah. I didn't think they went well together. I didn't think the wine did the food any favors, and I didn't think the food did the wine any favors.
Man, the truffle is the thing. Truffle is like classically paired with either Pinot Noir or Nebbiolo. That like sort of like really deep bass tone earthiness with what this has also a very deep earthiness, but in addition to that, this really like high toned bitter cranberry note. And all of that in concert together, I think, is something very special. Yeah, I got nothing for you. I just, your mouth is wrong.
It really wasn't very nice. It was hurtful.
Anyone else out there, to be clear, anyone else out there who doesn't think that this wine goes with this food, taste is subjective and that's fine. We'll serve you a different wine. But Scott is dumb and ugly.
Jamie's just mad because I didn't give him trigger warnings about the content of Raw or the premise of Raw.
I'm a little bit mad about that. Douchebag.
Some things just should be provocative and upsetting, Jamie, all right?
I honestly wasn't that upset by anything. I was shocked.
I was deeply upset.
I was shocked. I was provoked, but I was not upset.
I was physically upset by it both times I watched it.
No, I wasn't that either.
And then Tani and I were watching it last night. In fact, I was watching it by myself while she was doing something else downstairs. And then we get to like a pivot point in the movie, and in a scene involving a Brazilian wax right before this pivot point, I paused the movie because I was flinching and twinging and looking away from the screen so much. And I genuinely considered whether or not I wanted to finish watching. And that's when Tani came upstairs and she's like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "I kind of forgot how intense this was. And I don't know that I want to keep watching it." She's like, "Well, you have to. Give me some headphones. Let's keep watching." And so we put it right back on.
Right at that point.
Right when the scissor thing happens.
Oh,
and then
the
I just like spasmed and twitched. And it's a good movie. Spoilers, everyone. There are scissors. Are we done talking about the food?
We are.
Yeah.
And I was trying to transition us to the wine, but then we like got into a
argument
about whether the wine pairs with the food.
Well, because you're being cruel and not inclusive of my opinions.
Well, yeah, because you've got bad ones. But speaking of your bad opinions, what's your opinion of the wine by itself?
Well, I did like it more last night.
Interesting.
I was like super grooving on it last night, and I put back a great big honking glass of it and loved it and got kind of drunk. You were saying before this is high alcohol.
Yeah, what is 14.5.
14.5? Yeah. I got a pretty good buzz on from just one hearty glass last night. Really like it. Except for those tannins on the finish. The tannins.
This is quite a tannic wine.
Quite tannic.
Nebbiolo, famously one of the, like, up there with Cabernet Sauvignon and Tannat as, like, some of the most tannic grapes out there.
Is this medium plus or is this high
tannin? This is high.
This is high tannin. It's quite a bit. A little bit much, but I love the body. The body is quite exceptional. It's you described the previous one, the Pinot Noir, as velvet, and that, this is not velvet. This is something smoother than that. What fabric do we describe as smooth?
Silk.
This is like a high-bodied silk.
I find this to be rougher, like significantly rougher.
Well, on the finish, but then before then.
Interesting.
And maybe that's just the high body where it's thick. It feels mouth-filling. My mouth is filled no matter the volume of the sip that I take. God, it smells so good. It smells like raspberry jam. Good smelling. Is there like a petroleum thing on the nose? There's some kind of like almost like a gasoline funk on the nose, which I'm surprised by from something this red and this dark.
So you're, when I walked in,
is that the alcohol, the high alcohol?
No, it's a classic note of Nebbiolo.
Mm.
There is a book all about Nebbiolo, about Barolo specifically, called Roses and Tar. And that like tar, that like fresh asphalt thing, is classic to the grape.
Is there like an audio or like an audible version of this book?
Motherfucker.
See, I gotta stop doing it because I don't want to run this joke into the ground. It's a good joke and I don't want to ruin it. I gotta pace it.
Yeah, next episode, no Jamie can't read jokes.
I make no promises. If the setup is good, I have to take it. But I do need to ease it off before I get bored with it. It's not that it'll bother you, it's that I get bored.
I know you get bored.
Yeah.
I'm hoping you get bored soon.
Not yet. It's not a sweet wine, but there are lots of notes of sweet things. Getting blueberries and cream I was getting a lot of last night. Again, less so now. A lot of the things that I enjoyed a lot last night are lesser now. A little bit of spice, a little bit of pepper, a little bit of tang too. There's like a nice tang on the finish there.
This is also high acid.
So this is a high acid. This is a red that is high acid.
Yep.
That always confuses me. You know that confuses me. I was good two wines in a row. In one day, I was able to discern that they are in fact not sweet. But then the damn red wine acidity came back and threw me for a loop. What are the other notes? What are the other fancy boy, sophisticated psalm notes that I'm not picking up on?
This wine is very significantly floral as well. Just kind of like the last wine, the Bodega Chakra.
The Pinot Noir.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I have really, really, I have a very specific sense memory that I associate with a lot of very well-made Nebbiolo. In 2017, I went to Oregon for an event called Oregon Pinot Camp, which we don't have to get into right now. I was drunk basically the whole time. But before I arrived at Pinot Camp, I was in Portland, Oregon, and I went to the Rose Garden in Portland. And the Rose Garden is this beautiful rose garden, kind of a la Alice in Wonderland. It's at a pretty high elevation and it overlooks the city. And in the distance, you can see Mount Hood, and it's this just wonderful experience. And you walk into this garden and you're just, it's the freshest, most vibrant rose aroma that you've ever experienced. And I associate that like freshness of rose, like on the bush, with this. That, along with like bitter, the we've discussed the like R.W. Knudsen, like natural juices, that like bitter cranberry kind of note is here for sure. Raspberry jam, as you said, big time. Your wife, when I walked in, was talking about this wine being a little bit like vinyl.
Yeah.
And while I associate it with tar, it's some kind of a petroleum adjacent product. You know, I could get with vinyl on this wine as well.
See, when you put it that way, it doesn't sound appealing. Vinyl and tar.
I know.
You could get with some tar, though.
If it, you know, tastes like this, it's all together and, you know, it is a complete thing. It is not each individual note. And also, let us not forget, it is 100% grape juice.
All natural. Not from concentrate.
Not from concentrate. Boy, is it yummy. I do have a mea culpa about this wine, the issue. So this wine was the one that we had to substitute. I had chosen a different wine from our chosen retailer. And at the last minute, you said that they only had one bottle available. And so I had to come up with a replacement. And I went with this wine. So originally I had chosen Columbera and Garella Costa della Sesia.
Right.
And that is the wine that I described as rough, dark, mushroomy, high contrast, and traditional.
You do not find this to be rough, dark, mushroomy, high contrast, and traditional?
I consider it to be rough, high contrast, and traditional. Dark and mushroomy, I do not find this wine. I went with this wine because I knew that it would also pair with the pasta.
And which I don't believe that it does.
Which you don't believe that it does, but like one of us is a professional and the other one is you.
Wow. Wow, Jamie. Wow. Philadelphia Magazine described me as a local movie pro.
You are a movie. Okay, but I am a food and wine professional. Just saying. No, I'm sorry. I would like to issue a public apology to Scott.
Do you all hear the patronizing tone here? The condescension, the rank dismissiveness. You should just shut up. You've gotten your tone out there.
I apologize, Scott.
No, you don't.
Your experience is valid.
You are such an asshole. You are so cruel.
I mean it, but I am also saying it in a condescending tone.
I really miss my script, because when I'm on my script, you're on the defensive all the time. And the last two episodes, I have been on the back foot and I'm not enjoying this. And I'm going to have words with my doctor's office. If I ever remember to call them.
Absolutely bring up that you were on the defensive on your podcast because you didn't have your prescription.
That's right. They changed the power dynamics of the show for two episodes. Dozens of people will be disappointed that my sparkling wit was not on fullest display here, putting you down at every opportunity.
I mean, honestly, I think you're doing a pretty good job right now.
I've done better.
You have.
Yeah.
Wow. So yeah, I had a last minute decision. I knew it was from the same grape. It's Nebbiolo. It's from a little bit farther south. The Columbera and Garella is from Alto Piemonte and is a little bit more rustic in its style and shows a little bit of that mushroomy sort of oxidative character, is a little bit darker in its presentation. This wine is more bright and lively. So sorry about what that does to the pairing. We haven't gotten there for the movie.
Mm.
But this does come from a producer that I truly love, that I think is as important, if not more so, than Colombera and Gorella. Mm. This particular style of wine, the Nebbiolo di Alba or the Lange Nebbiolo, the like quote unquote lower tier Nebbiolos, I find to be extraordinarily pleasurable to drink. They're the kind of thing that I try to keep around in my home, but I can't because they just end up getting drunk because I like them a lot.
I think you're the one who ends up getting drunk, Jamie.
Nailed it.
But so these are low-end Nebbiolos.
They're the, like, the higher ends are the Barolos and the Barbarescos, the ones that cost a lot more money and that are made to age for long periods of time. And those are great. I love those wines. In fact, Barolo from 1964 was one of the wines that got me into doing this professionally in the first place.
But that costs thousands of dollars that a
was
bottle.
That was a $550 bottle in a restaurant.
I'd have thought more for something that's 50 years old.
If it was Burgundy, it would have been thousands of dollars. But, you know, Piedmont, while being largely well appreciated, is definitely not as expensive. The market hasn't become so outrageous in that area yet. Although prices over the course of my career have definitely gone up. Like if I were to go and try and find that same bottle, that same 1964 bottle, or even like same producer, exactly the same age from today, whatever that math would be, it would be significantly more expensive now than it was in 2011 when I had that.
And the bottle would be smaller too because of shrinkflation. Shrinkflation, Jamie. Shrinkflation.
Why are we here now? Why are we talking about shrinkflation?
Sofia Coppola's cute little boutique fancy cans of canned wine, they're smaller so she can charge more for the same droppage.
That might be something of the reason. They're like 8-ounce cans. They're like the 8-ounce, yeah, whatever. Whatever. Yeah,
that's stupid. 8-ounce cans are stupid.
But 8 ounces of wine is more than a glass of wine. A glass is 5 ounces.
But I can fit a whole bottle in that glass.
Stop it.
That's what internet said.
Stop it.
Jamie, your beloved Algo told me that I could pour a whole bottle in that glass.
Stop it right now.
It's your algorithm, okay? Right this moment. It's your algorithm.
It is not my algorithm.
Of the two of us.
Not my algorithm.
Of the two of us. Hashtag not all algorithms, Jamie. Of the two of us, you're responsible for Winestagram, okay? That part of the algorithm is your fault.
I didn't do it, man. It wasn't me.
I really do like this wine, though.
Yeah, it's really fucking good.
And I'm going to cut to the chase. It paired very well with the movie.
You think?
Well, the tannin paired very well with all the unpleasant parts that I wanted to look away from.
There is that. And that there's the tension.
I was
like,
literally spasming. Like, I was like freaking, like physically freaking out.
The scene that you were talking about, the finger scene?
Yeah, the Brazilian wax turned into the pivot point scene.
I also had my hands up in the air, yep. Balled up into fists,
yep.
Like sort of flapping uncomfortably. Yep.
It's like the bad version of all the spasmodic gyrations I was doing when we saw RRR, where like all the joy and the absurdity of RRR, and I would just like punch my fists in the air and freak out, and I wasn't in control of it. And it was the same thing with Raw, except it was bad and it was somewhat involuntary and I hated it.
It was completely involuntary. Yeah. And I found it to be less viscerally like problematic than you did, I think. Because once you get past that turning point, that is really profoundly difficult to deal with. The rest,
none of it's as bad as that.
Right.
That scene is the peak of like physical discomfort and cringe.
That and the sex scene.
See, I didn't find the sex scene that disturbing or upsetting.
I found it quite distressing because like just him trying to like, he kind of wants to keep having sex, but really needs her to stop trying to bite him.
Well, we should let's rewind it back. Let's rewind it back. Are we done with wine times?
Yeah.
Okay. So Raw, a 2016 coming of age horror drama written and directed by Julia Ducournau. It follows young freshman Justine navigating the horrors of hazing initiation rituals at the veterinary school that her parents attended and where her older sister Alexis is an upperclassman. When the freshman, after a series of horrible bits of bullying, including being beaten, assaulted, like physically, not sexually assaulted, rounded up, forced to crawl in the catacombs of the building, and then brought out to a sexy drunken dance party. So a little bit of a zert veg there. But after a number of day one horrible initiation rituals, and then when they all pose for their group photo, some kind of hopefully animal blood is dumped upon them, and then they are all lined up and forced to eat a raw rabbit's kidney. When this was forced upon Justine, who is a vegetarian, and her mother is very protective of her vegetarianism and concerned that maybe she has an allergy to meat, after she consumes this rabbit's kidney, Justine undergoes some rapid and terrifying changes in her behavior and her appetites and her actual diet. The film stars Garance Marillier as Justine, Ella Rumpf as Alexis, and Rabba Nate Ufella as Justine's roommate, Adrian. The film premiered at the Cannes Film Festival in 2016 to largely rave reviews, premiered in the U.S. in 2017. And 5 years later, 2021, Ducournau's follow-up feature, Titan, would win the fucking Palme d'Or at Cannes. And that movie is like this, but even more extreme.
Wow.
Titan, and people should just watch that movie, but with all of the trigger warning caveats I could possibly throw at you. But Titan, in the first 20 minutes, has six of the most intense acts of sex and or violence that I have ever seen on screen. In the first 20 minutes.
Heard that.
She fucks a car, Jamie. Just like imagine if like a woman climbed into like Optimus Prime, and then while she was in Optimus Prime, he partially transformed into a robot and fucked her.
Moving right along.
Indeed. So now we just must peel back the veil of spoiler territory, because you can't talk about it without talking about it. If what we have described thus far appeals to you or interests you, go and check it out. Watch Raw. It is, as of this recording, on Netflix. I highly recommend it with all the caveats and trigger warnings that I have provided. If it does not, I guess you can just keep listening. But here be the spoilers, y'all. After eating the raw rabbit's kidney, Justine develops voracious appetites for raw meat, which ultimately reveals itself to be some kind of hereditary cannibalism passed on to both herself and her sister by their mother. And in the pivotal scene that Jamie and I were sort of dancing around, while her older sister is trying to, like, in sort of like a sweet but very forceful big sisterly way, give Justine a Brazilian wax, which is just horrifyingly violent on its own, because like the wax pulling at the pubic hair, like, just was
the really close up shot.
The very close up shot of her like underwear clad pubic area, and then the pink wax ripping at the pubic hair, and it was just not coming out.
I'm like, no,
I was fully cooking then. And then Alexis goes and gets the scissors to trim it off, and then Justine's like, no, it's my pussy, and kicks her, and then Alexis accidentally cut her finger off and starts to bleed out, and she passes out. And after Justine calls the paramedics, she picks up her sister's finger and thinks about it for a little while, and some sweet pop music starts to play, and then she chews on that motherfucking finger like a chicken wing.
Well, I mean, she starts by tasting the blood.
Yep.
And then like nibbling a little bit around the edges.
Yep. And then
strips it like someone, yep, who is in a chicken wing eating competition.
Yep. Very efficiently pulling at the flesh with her teeth, stretching it out. Like, as Tani said, like anyone who has ever eaten a chicken wing knows exactly what that textural experience is like. It's like, oh, well, the skin is stretchy, but then there's like a tendon under there, and you have to kind of like really pull at it. And then I was just fully spasming and flipping out.
Yep. It was uncomfortable. And then Alex wakes up, because she had passed out.
Wakes up from the, watching her doing this.
And you don't know what's going on. So the look that she gives Justine is like kind of disbelief and sadness. And then like tears roll down her face. She's crying. And you're thinking to yourself, okay, this is a normal reaction. She's sad because she's discovered that her sister is a psychopath.
Cannibal, Jamie. We don't know if she's a psychopath. I don't know if there's something in the DSM-4 to describe what's going on there.
Less than voluntary eating of human flesh. I don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever. And then we find out that she's she was crying, maybe possibly out of joy because she now has a companion in cannibalism,
or guilt.
Out of guilt because now both of them are similarly afflicted. Who the fuck knows?
Yep. It's a very complicated family saga that the movie weaves. And then the very vague opening scene of the film is suddenly revealed to us its significance, because to feed her sister and to help indoctrinate her, Alexis goes and...
Hold on. Just pause for a second, because it plays like foreshadowing.
Right.
Like
it plays like a cold opening. This is the most exciting thing that's going to happen. We're going to show you.
And then we'll
flash back 2 weeks ago.
Except it is revealed that...
That this is the way that Alexis has figured out how to satisfy her urges, is that she throws herself in front of cars, forces people into fatal collisions, and then eats them.
Right. So then she does this with Justine in tow. And at that moment...
She just starts eating the guy's head while he's still alive?
Right. And at that moment... And her fucking comment is, he won't make it. Like, it's
blood.
Okay.
Oh, God.
And there's blood all down her.
Oh, God.
But like in this moment, you're forced to contend with the fact that that opening scene wasn't a cold open. We're never going to flash back to it. That was just... like in the time frame, Alex was already doing this.
That's just how she do.
That's how she hunts.
Yep.
Which is not how Justine hunts.
Justine is still figuring it out.
Right.
She doesn't know how to yet. She doesn't know her process. She hasn't even fully admitted that this is her thing. Also, if you have not watched the movie yet at this point, I want to be very clear that we are not describing like a low rent, like trashy, exploitative horror movie. This is a high class, very thoughtful, artfully made, internal, esoteric, exploitative horror movie.
Yes.
And it is, in fact, I wouldn't even call it exploitative, because like it is deeply invested in exploring the emotional experience and the trauma of all of these characters. It's not exploiting them. It's not putting the cannibalism and the violence and the tragedy and the generational trauma that mom and dad have passed on to these girls. It's not exploiting it.
Do we want to talk about it being generational now?
I mean, that's the whole thing. Like, there's so fucking much going on with this movie. You know what this movie is actually a really good double feature with?
What's that?
Marie Antoinette. They are both movies about young women whose family have directed them into some institution that the family has a level of familiarity with and has expectations of these women going to these places and being successful. The families do not prepare them for what they are going to encounter when they get there. And then at the moment that the women finally like achieve their power and transcend and are able to assert themselves in a position of dominance, everything fucking explodes and they are damned and they are shamed for the things that they have done. They're basically the same movie is what I'm saying.
That's a hot take.
In the broadest strokes, in the arc of it, these are movies that are exploring the same thing. I'm not joking.
I know you're not joking.
Marie being woken up in the nude and being forced to go through the dressing ritual with all the ladies of the court
very
watching
much like
is the exact same thing.
Being hazed.
All the hazing rituals. Yeah.
Correct.
Yep.
Yeah. That's not, you're not wrong.
I am in fact right.
Justine actually has more support than Marie Antoinette.
At least she's got her sister. Until her sister fucking turns on her. The devastation of the video when Alex gets her or like finds her when she's super drunk and then takes her into the morgue, and then cut to the next morning, Justine is like hungover and rushes to class and nobody wants to sit next to her. And then Adrian shows her the video of her like drunk and like trying to bite at the hand of a corpse in the morgue. Like a dog.
Then the ensuing fight where they just keep biting each other. Sucking on each other's arm.
Yeah. Well, it's biting and then it turns into like biting, but like face to face and bleeding and then kind of crying and then supporting each other. And then Omega spoilers for the end of the movie. They go back and then fade out in ellipsis and cut to the next morning. And Justine wakes up next to her roommate, Adrian, who is a gay man who like does ultimately drunkenly and hornily like fucking her, but she's kind of fucking him and he's a little frightened by it and she keeps trying to bite him. And we're not 100% sure, or at least I'm not, if she's lustful for his body or if she's lustful for his flesh.
I think it's pretty clear that it's a little bit of both.
It's a little bit of both. Yeah.
Like, she wants to lose her virginity. She thinks he's hot.
But she also wants to eat him. And then maybe...
That scene is distressing and confusing. Because it's like that she's coming of age in this sexual way and like trying to figure out her new cannibal powers and ends up biting herself to satisfy.
Just to satisfy the edge. Yeah. She just needed the pain pleasure threshold to get crossed. She needed
and
the release.
Taste of blood.
Yeah.
Also.
I mean, it is largely like a vampire story as well. Yeah. It's gnarly. It's provocative. It's repulsive.
And then
the coda. We're just recounting the plot of the movie at this point. But this is like the profound part of the generational trauma. This is the thing that is so fucked up for me.
Right. They visit Alex in prison and then like kind of perfunctorily leave. And then they're having breakfast or dinner, whatever, at home. Mm-hmm. The three of them, mom, dad, and Justine. Mm-hmm. And mom is giving Justine crap for not finishing her veggies. And in fact, as though Justine is a small child, says you are not allowed to get up from your place until you have finished your vegetables.
Well, because mom doesn't want her to become like her.
Except.
And mom thinks that, like, they all know that Alex has done it, that Alex has now eaten, has tasted man flesh. Meat's back on the menu, boys. Somebody did a whole oral history.
Scott, girls, meat's back on the menu, girls.
Fine. Someone did a whole oral history just of that line of dialogue from the Two Towers when the orcs are like debating whether or not they're going to eat the hobbits and
they don't need their legs.
And the oral history was centered around the concept of like, does orc culture have restaurants? Why do they have menus? Let alone why are they Cockney? But anyway.
Oh my God. Yeah. So then Justine is sitting at the table with her dad.
And dad makes the big reveal that
he met her at vet school, that they came up together, that he was so in love with her, that they got pregnant. And then he's like playing with what we think is a cleft palate, but now we know
mom ate the center of his upper lip.
He stayed. And then he unbuttons his shirt to reveal that he has just been getting chewed on for 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like on the one hand, it is the climax of the movie and the reveal from dad is like this profound act of love between these two people. And that like, he allows himself not to be a victim, but to like willingly give up his body to his wife to like feed her completely criminal like diet. And it's seemingly like a biological need. Like it seems like Justine is going crazy by not having meat. Like it's a vampire thing. They have to do it.
Right.
She can't eat anything else. It is an act of love and of profound sacrifice. And on the other hand, and this is where like the willful generational trauma that's being passed down is so distressing to me in this movie, is that mom and dad both went to the same goddamn veterinary school.
Yep.
They knew all of the hazing traditions. And we know from the photo that the two girls see on Justine's first night that all of the freshmen getting dunked in blood is a tradition that goes back decades because we see mom and dad in the picture.
Yep.
Which means that the raw food consumption
is also part of it,
which is why mom is so concerned about the two girls or about Justine's vegetarianism, like being protected, which is why she freaks out at the cafeteria in the beginning about like the sausage that she finds in the mashed potatoes.
Yep.
And they sent her there anyway. They sent her into the meat grinder. and now mom is mad at her because she's not finishing her veggies. Like, I don't know, mom, maybe encourage her to go to art school or something. They did this to her.
Alex, who is now in prison for it.
It's the whole movie is like, it's a raw nerve forgive me for the word use, but like, it's the kind of horror movie that like, when you get like an electric shock or it's just like, there's a twitch and it's not just repulsion and, you know, disgusting and fear. It's all of those things. And then like, it's not terror, but something akin to terror where it's just like such a profound, disturbing visual and conceit and emotional experience that you're witnessing that I can't help but like twitch and like vibrate and look away. Like I looked away a lot during this movie and not just because of the gore, but because of the, like, I can't see this person eat her sister's finger.
Right.
I can't see this person eat the rabbit kidney. I just found so gross and I couldn't look at that. Also, yep. It looked like it was like floating in like a jar of formaldehyde or something, which was particularly gross.
Horrible and gross.
Even just all of them dunked in the blood.
Also, I'm sure this occurred to you, like as they were leaving the prison, like every person in prison with Alex is in danger now.
Yeah.
Like there's a whole other movie about Alex in prison.
Raw 2. Raw Deal.
You just nailed that title.
Would
stuck that landing.
Would watch that movie, yes, unfortunately. I would. Because now you've got a cannibal sequel, but it's also a women's prison movie.
Yep.
Which I would watch. No, but it's like it even without the like exploitative horror cannibal element to it, like the movie is still profoundly upsetting and distressing, and the metaphor of the cannibalism for a sexual awakening and for something, some kind of like trauma, like even if there was no cannibalism, mom and dad sending their girls to that school where they right. know that the hazing and the abusive bullying situation is so toxic and upsetting and disturbing, the shit that they do to these kids.
Right.
That is a profoundly fucked up failing as parents to do that to your children.
Even if you're going to take the leap that it's like okay to send your kids to a place like that, to not tell them about any of it.
No preparation whatsoever.
Whatever.
Yeah.
So bad. The casualness with which all of the adults treat everything that's going on.
Yeah.
Like even the doctor, yeah,
Justine, after she has the rash breakout after the first rabbit part that she eats. Yeah. Doctor is unfazed by any of it.
And seemingly empathetic, but completely unfazed. God, I love the moment. It prepared me a little bit when Justine is in Alex's bathroom and finds the same cream.
Yeah. The same rash cream.
With all of the everything going on, I was like, oh no, I see where this is going. Like this was before Alex gets revealed. This is right before the Brazilian wax and the finger and everything. And you're like, oh, this is something different than I thought.
Yeah. It is an endlessly surprising movie. I find the characterizations are all so rich and like the motivations and the behaviors of the characters. The performances,
I was about to say.
Garance Marillier as Justine is like unbelievable performance. Just her physical performance alone, the arc that she goes on from being like demure and shy and kind of waifish and sheepish, the physical like transformations, like when she's fucking going to town on that raw chicken breast in the fridge and
the mirror scene with the lipstick.
Yep. Yeah. A marvelous performance and like a fearless performance as well. Like, and that's something that holds through in Ducournau's second film, Titan, as well. Like the performances in that movie are incredible. And the fucking wild sci-fi horror shit that those characters go through is almost secondary to the extreme emotional journeys that the characters have together. Where like she uses the extremes to push your buttons, but then it just like it kind of heightens the intense and upsetting and provocative emotional journeys that would be there even without the intense horror element too.
Right. So you think it pairs with this wine?
I think it does. I mean, in particular, this is also part of why I think the movie is a good double feature with Marie Antoinette, and that they are both very sensual filmmakers. They are all about creating a physical experience for the audience. And I think Ducournau even more so than Sofia Coppola. Like this movie, you can feel the blood that's dumped on their heads. You know that the blood is sticky,
yep,
and that it's probably a little bit warm. Oh, and you know, God, how gross, like, it feels when it's dried on them.
In class, and like they don't let them wash.
Everyone is covered in blood.
And she's like itching her scalp, and you're like, oh, there's dried blood in her hair.
But then she's also, that's the beginning of her rash. You can feel how much the rash all over her body itches when she's itching on it in her sleep. You know what the disgusting, huge fucking clear solo cup of vodka tastes like when she is drinking it at the party. You can feel the sweat at the dance parties and all the bodies close together. You feel through the imagery and the chewing and the angles and the performance and the sound effects.
Yep.
Everything that she eats and everyone that she eats. You can almost smell the like rot when she wakes up next to Adrian and his fucking femur can be seen through the like most of his upper leg musculature that's been chewed away. She is so good at creating a sensory experience, which I find so profound and so distressing. Like there are some sensual filmmakers like Coppola is a good example, who are great at creating those experiences that are transportative and that are pleasant.
Yep.
And that give you a new perspective. And then there's somebody like Ducardeau who uses those same powers for evil and to just really push all the worst and scariest buttons that you didn't even know were there. And it's like, we've talked about it before. It's like, it's the power of horror and why some film people, not all, like I'm not particularly a horror guy, because like I enjoy them and I enjoy having those buttons pushed, but not all the time. But like, is this a pleasant watching experience? No, it is extremely unpleasant and it's upsetting and it's distressing. And I considered not finishing the movie, but it is a rarefied experience. And it's something that I'll take with me. Like it is an unforgettable experience, and it is extremely provocative in the ways that it makes you think about family and about parents.
Yep.
And about being a young person shoved into an educational institution, and being a young woman, and being hungry,
being horny also,
and the fine line between them. This is something Tani was saying last night about the like the lust and the very like, she makes the same lust faces when she's hungry for person as when she's horny for person, you right know? Which is why that attraction to Adrian is so confusing.
Yep. And why that scene is so distressing.
Yeah. But yeah, so like on the pairing side, like I think the textural elements in this wine go very nicely with the movie because of how much texture you feel in the movie.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
Even the tannins that I was not enjoying, like those tannins are in this movie. Those raw, like scraped sandpaper texture that I'm feeling is like, is the twinge, is the, oh my God, she's eating the finger. Like it's a drumstick. Like, oh.
I do think that having to change to this wine over the Columbera and Gorilla hurt the pairing a little bit.
Really?
Because I think that wine's darkness and dankness, the like mushroomy thing, would go much better with all of the fucking blood imagery and all of the like the really dark, intense, like that wine would push this even further in that direction. Mm. And the like elegant fruity florality of this wine maybe is the problem, if there is one, in this pairing.
But see, that actually works for me accidentally as a counterpoint, because it feels like a strange way to recommend movies to people. It's why I don't recommend movies like this to most people. But like that is such a strong and upsetting, like visceral full body experience watching that movie, that I liked all the fruit in this.
Right.
I liked on the nose, at least, the suggestion of berries and of sweetness and of pleasant flavors and then all the fruit in there. And it like it, I was reaching for the glass a lot during the movie. Whereas I think if the dankness and the mushroom like mirrored more what was going on screen, I might not have gone for it as much. I think
that makes sense.
I think we kind of backslid into it. Yeah.
Cool. I dig it. We got wife takes next.
Yeah. Oh man. She has some takes. Okay. She enjoyed watching me like spasm throughout this movie in upset and distress. And she just likes anything where there's a lot of food stuff on screen. And
yeah, that makes sense.
And you know, as a huge fan of both the NBC television series Hannibal, and in particular of the work of the food stylist on that show, Janice Poon, who made all of the like Hannibal Lecter cannibal dishes look so beautiful and like haute cuisine. Tani was all over this movie. all right. So she has two questions here for you. They're both multiple choice.
Okay. I'm ready.
I should preface for the audience, Wife Takes, a semi-recurring segment on the show in which my wife Tani tries to recreate one of her favorite bygone experiences from coming to restaurants where Jamie would serve us wines, in which she would attempt to recreate his own flowery, pretentious, obnoxious, poetic, purely conceptual, adjectival descriptions of wines by doing it in her own way and making him sound silly and stupid. And that game has sort of evolved just into multiple choice questions and ways to flout her own cleverness and make fun of Jamie. And I enjoy it a lot. So, two questions, multiple choice. Here we go. Jamie, which food does this wine pair best with? A, spare ribs. B, chicken wings. C, oxtail. Or D, steak tartare.
Oxtail.
Now, you may not notice this, but she has picked all of these foods that in some way, while not being specific or explicit, in some way are suggestive of imagery from the movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I, yes.
Yeah.
The chicken wings or the finger.
Right. Oxtail is Alex up to her shoulder and cow ass. That one really upset me.
What was the first food?
Spare ribs.
Spare ribs.
Yeah.
Spare ribs for what part?
Oh, I don't know. Just like human ribs.
Okay, great.
And steak tartare is just the rarest and rawest of meats.
Yeah.
So you think it goes with steak tartare?
Oxtail.
Oxtail.
Yeah. Traditional, like if you're in Piedmont, I've been told, braised beef over polenta with nebbiolo or barolo, like that's a classic thing that you'll be served. And also it's a thing that I've done a lot. Working with Chris at Southwark, he likes to do things like that in the wintertime, and pairing that type of braised beef with a nebbiolo is a wonderful food and wine experience.
That sounds good.
Yeah, it's really fucking good.
Yeah.
So either like short ribs or oxtail braised and served over polenta with nebbiolo, barolo, barbaresco, alto piemonte, whatever, fucking stellar.
Well, I want that now. Chef's kiss. Let us have that. I want it.
I mean, it's kind of a wintertime dish, man. Like, it's not like the
but things I want are it now.
I mean, you can probably get it now.
There's well, good
probably
then. That's fine.
A restaurant nearby that's doing like a braised beef
over thing. Polenta because yeah. I like polenta.
So sometimes they do it over mashed potatoes because people are even like basic enough to just want potatoes instead of polenta, which I think is dumb, but whatever.
Next
not that
question.
I don't like potatoes. I'm on record as
mashed potatoes are great.
Potatoes.
We need to keep another list now. There's the list of things Jamie wants to put on a t-shirt. There's the list of all the things that Jamie is not. And now the things that Jamie is on record about.
I'm on record loving potatoes.
There is no record. No one cares.
I'm probably going to get a tattoo of a potato.
I think you're going to get a tattoo of all the things that you're on record about loving potatoes. All right. Next question from Tani.
Sure.
Which food experience does the wine best pair with? A, the squeaky squish of a generous piece of firm sashimi.
Nope.
B, the coy resistance of a bite of blue rare steak just before it yields to the implacable pressure of your teeth.
Oh my God. Why is she like this?
I don't know. I've never understood. Or C, the faux nonchalance of eating the eyeball from a whole baked fish mostly to impress your fellow dinner guests.
It's B, but also C is great.
Do you like how she called you out for faux nonchalance? It was performative nonchalance.
I like eating the fish.
It was so gross. We got a whole fish served to us, and Jamie's like, who wants the eye? And he just gets the fucking knife and puts it in there and pops out the eye and slurp. That was grosser than anything in Raw.
Which I have. Fish eyes are tasty. Come at me, bro.
It was gross to look at, think about, and hear.
Whatever. I don't need to be held down by your hangups, man.
So you think that the food experience that this wine best pairs with is the coy resistance of a bite of blue rare steak just before it yields to the implacable pressure of your teeth?
Yes.
All right, fair. All of this, by the way, is making fun of you, but this is all for me. She is doing all of this to make me uncomfortable by not saying human being eating a finger or
right.
Two sisters drunkenly ate a dude's fucking leg while he bled out from a spinal injury. But to imply it all with her clever word choices.
That method of murder. Oh, my God.
Ski pole in the spine?
Ski pole directly to the spine.
It was fucking, what's his name? Russian literature person.
Tolstoy?
No. Chekhov.
Chekhov.
It was Chekhov's ski pole. Ski pole was right there in the beginning. He was going to defend himself in the first hazing that ritual night. Chekhov's ski pole.
We're definitely getting an inline text message from Dan Marino
about Chekhov's ski pole.
Chekhov's ski pole, yeah.
Whatever. Johnny Words is dead. See you in hell, Johnny Words. So, James, Philadelphia tasting menu, part four.
Part four.
What and where and why are we eating next time?
Well, I don't know that I have a great reason for why.
Hopefully not who, Jamie. Hopefully not who.
We're not eating a person. I'm not Justine. You're not Alex. Also vice versa. We're not eating people.
Fine. What, where, why?
Next restaurant in the lineup is a restaurant that I have an awful lot of affection for. It's a restaurant that I currently work at, sort of.
A little bit of self-dealing here. I see how it is. A
little bit of...
We're skirting some ethical lines here.
Nepotism, perhaps?
It's not nepotism. It's not nepotism. It's just self-dealing.
Southwark. Great restaurant in Queen Village. It has been, since 2004, a staple of the cocktail community in Philadelphia. And since Chris and Marina took over the restaurant in 2015, has also had a truly spectacular food program. Every summer, Chris likes to put on the menu a spaghetti dish that is just real simple, basically heirloom tomatoes and spaghetti sauteed together. It is one of my favorite things the last couple of years to eat each summer. I really love fresh, local heirloom tomatoes, and I think that this is a really great way to eat them. So this is the tomato spaghetti at Southwark. With that, I paired Bedrock Ode to Lulu Rosé, which is available at Crush Wine Company, for $24.
Well, Jim Jam Marino, you told me that the Bedrock Ode to Lulu Rosé 2021 needs time to decant and or age, that there is homage about it, that it is powerful for a rosé, that it is pale, and it defies expectations.
Yes, sir.
Yep. So I guess, accidentally, this makes for a three-part mini-mini-series within the six-part mini-series about dark, fucked-up, traumatic things happening to young women who are just trying to, like, get through the day.
Wow.
We will be watching 2019's Midsommar. This is a film written and directed by Ari Aster. It is often described as a folk horror film. It stars Florence Pugh, and it is a sort of like dark horror daytime folk epic. It is spectacular. It is a very, very dark comedy to the audience and to Jamie. If you find yourself wanting to laugh at some of the darkest, bleakest, and most fucked up shit that happens in this movie, trust that instinct. Let yourself roll with it, just as I did with my very confused, sold-out opening night audience when it came out at my theater a few years ago. And in terms of content warnings, the warning being, aside from the types of violence you might expect in a horror film, would this is a horror movie, but it's an A24 horror movie. Some people who don't want to lower themselves to saying that they enjoy horror movies describe films like this as elevated horror, which is some pretentious bullshit. It's A24 horror. It's art house horror. It's horror akin to Raw, although not as repulsive and raw nerve, you know, electrocuting. But in terms of content warnings, the movie opens with an off-screen act of suicide. So brace yourselves, and that part is pretty rough. But then where we go from there is a pretty profound and extraordinary journey. And I hope everyone enjoys it, especially you, Jamie.
It sounds like I'm going to love it.
Because you have to.
I don't have to love it.
No, you have to watch it, though.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, everyone.
Well,
what?
Midsommar is available, right, as of this recording, at least, on Showtime through their streaming partnership with A24. You can also get it on Canopy if you have a card or a membership to a library that has a participating partnership correspondence with Canopy, and it is available to rent wherever you get your VODs. I highly recommend that you do.
And I have to.
And you have to. That's right. And I have to drink this fucking wine.
You're going to like it. It's good. It's good wine.
I mean, I've liked all three you've picked so far this miniseries. Do you think?
Could we go six for six?
Well, it's not about we, okay, Jamie. Like, this is all about you.
No, it's a little bit about you.
No, that's not fair. If I don't like it, it's your fault.
That's not true.
And if I do like it, you get to succeed.
No, if you don't like it, it's your fault. If you like it, it's my success.
That, all right. Well, that's not how I feel about this.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us.
I fucking guess.
Follow us on the socials at Bigger Bottle Pod. If you have questions, comments, or concerns, please email us at biggerbottlepod@gmail.com.
I have questions, comments, and concerns,
which you voice to me regularly via in-person text message and the phone.
But you never listen to them, so maybe I'll submit a formal complaint via email.
Go ahead and
I'll read it to you.
Just delete it immediately. Make sure you rate, review, and follow the show wherever you get your podcasts, or also possibly subscribe, depending on whatever the fuck. If you're a listener outside the United States, please email us any reviews so that we can read them on the air, because we only get domestic reviews here in the United States, which is bullshit.
And if we don't know about your review, then everybody has to hear about me replacing the light fixture in my bathroom this weekend.
Yeah, and I don't know which I want less, to watch a new Marvel movie or to hear more about Scott's fucking home improvement projects.
I mean, we've already broken the dam and had you watch a DC movie. Maybe somebody, one of our listeners is a Zack Snyder stan, and maybe wants you to watch the cut.
No.
Maybe they want you to watch the 4-hour Zack Snyder Justice League.
Whoever of you out there who may suggest that in a review, like, just know that I will remember and I will take revenge.
Oh, you know what's great is that I have not written a review for the show on Apple Podcasts.
That is disqualified.
I refuse. How will you know? I'll come up with some kind of clever anonymous username on Apple Podcasts.
I will be able to sniff out your writing style, motherfucker.
Oh, this is gonna be good.
Tell your friends about the show.
I'll get Jamie to watch the cut. The Snyder cut. Oh man. Oh, you'll be longing for Green Lantern. If you put them both on at the same time, you could watch Green Lantern 2¼ times before the Snyder cut is over.
I'm so upset right now.
All right, finish the outro, Jamie. You're taking too long.
It is your turn.
Did you say all the things?
I did.
Okay, fine. This episode. I just want Jamie to watch the Snyder cut now. Ooh. 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 Oh, no. I got the jinx. Oh, it's bad. It's so bad. Okay. This episode was for two. Oh, no.
I'm usually the one that gets the gigs.
Oh, no. Woosah. Oh.
Get it the fuck together, Scott.
I don't know if I can. This episode was produced and edited by Scott Hudson. That is me. Our social media.
What the fuck, dude?
Oh, no.
Our social media.
No, you don't get to do this. This is my part. I have to do this.
Our social media presence is thanks to Jamie Harrison Rubin. Our art is by Ron.
You fucking.
I just muted Jamie's microphone. You don't get to take this from me. This is all I have. You don't get to take this from me. This episode was produced.
Oh, no.
Oh, boy. Okay. This episode was produced and edited by Scott Hudson. That is me. Our social media presence is thanks to Jamie Harrison Rubin. That is him, muted, sitting right across from me. Our art is by Ross Connard. Thank you very much, Ross. Remember to drink more wine. And no, I can't. I can't.
Motherfucker was trying to take my part after he forcefully stopped me. I've been muzzled. Anyway, remember, everyone, drink more wine and watch more movies. It's good for you. We promise. For anyone out there who has ever done any kind of like in the bedroom, like, I know I'm going to stop for a while. Fuck. That was terrifying.
This is not going in the episode. I am now distressed. I have learned more about you than I wanted to. You knew I wasn't going to be happy about this. No one has to hear this, or I'm just bleeping all of it.
Oh, man. Don't be such a prude.
I'm not being a prude, and I'm not kink shaming you, and you do you.
It's not.
But There are not things. There are things about you that I don't want to know about. And there are things about you that I don't want to have a recording of us discussing together.
Listen, I said it because I'm happy with it being out there.
I'm canceling the show. I can't reach the end credit song button now.
But you're canceling the show again for the second time today.
I think it's the third time in the last two episodes. But yes, we're over now.